Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Friday edition of the Damage Report. The big old taking out the trash day with me, Johnny Rolla, and Brett Ehrlich. The B himself. How's it going, Brett?
What up? Haven't looked at myself in the mirror yet. Okay, I'm fine. Now I'm super attractive, ladies and germs. Thank you so much. My OnlyFans foot page is operational. That's a joke. It doesn't exist. So that's not violating the terms of service. Have you been, John?
Which has now been resolved. Like, I kind of predicted it. I know we're jumping right into the news or whatever. What do you think about the reversal?
All I gotta say is Daddy exhaled for the first time in a long time. After yeah. It came back. Anyways, yeah,
I'm sure a lot of people did. A lot of families did.
The multiple people that I have talked to about it have just highlighted the word suspended, not canceled or reversed or stopped. They're just like suspended. I know Bree Estrig is like, I'm still on the lookout for a better place to go. So she's there's various, and that's a total of three people I've consulted. So
that's the most research we've ever done. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to hear it. Anyway, glad to have you here. As alluded to in the intro, we will be taking out the trash a little bit later. I have a bit of a throwback classic piece of political garbage I'm gonna be throwing away. I have no idea who Brett's is. There's still like a little bit over an hour for you to head to the community tab on the Damage Report YouTube channel if you wanna vote for the community garbage person of the week that's available to you. And that'll be how we close out the show. But in getting there, we're gonna be talking about awful decision by the Supreme Court, updates on what's going on in Afghanistan. Spoiler alert, it's all bad. We've got an interview with the cop who shot Ashley Babbitt and anti-maskers descending into even lower depths. I don't know, we got a lot of stuff. You better buckle up. Brett, what do you think? You ready to do this?
I'm ready. I'm just ready, John. I was going to promote a bunch of shows that are on later, but I'll do that during the break for comments.
We will do that because there are shows and they are coming up. But with that said, let's do this, team. As we were worrying about earlier this week, the Supreme Court decided to get involved in the issue having to do with the eviction moratorium that the CDC set up not long ago, with them last night blocking the CDC from enforcing the federal moratorium on evicting renters during the coronavirus pandemic. It was a 6-3 decision. Get used to that. They're fun ones when the supermajority of conservatives get together. But anyway, the decision now puts hundreds of thousands of tenants at risk of losing shelter while the administration struggles to speed the flow of billions of dollars in federal funding to people who are behind in rent because of the pandemic and its associated economic hardship. Only about $5.1 billion of the nearly $50 billion in aid that's been had been dispersed by the end of July. So one of the main reasons that the CDC set up the eviction moratorium was to give states and localities time to distribute that aid. The Supreme Court is apparently deciding, who needs it? And so they've decided. Now we're gonna get into a little bit more of their argumentation there and the response from the very small number of liberals on the court. But Brett, what do you think about the Supreme Court deciding to get involved here?
I mean, the 10,000 foot view is in situations like this where you watch the various branches of government weigh in on what's going on and you see it break down on partisan lines based on what the party was in power of the White House at the time that that justice was appointed. It really comes down to what group of people is the government about? And in this situation, the government is not, I mean, these are extraordinary times. And yes, it does seem weird that the CDC would be the mechanism by which we deliver assistance to this many people, but it is kind of part of something that got passed by the government.
Yeah.
At a time when it made sense to do something that big, and this is just an extension of it. Mm-hmm. And what's frustrating is it has become very clear through this decision that the group of people that the government is all about is the not just landlords, not mom and pop landlords, but the giant corporations that are trying to systemically change something. And usually when we advocate for systemic change, it's in the right direction. But in this situation, it is turning the entire, it's people who are attempting to turn the entire housing industry into something different, where the American dream of owning a house of owning your own house or being able to have shelter at any rate, that's gone. And the reason I say owning a house is because they're trying to make it so it's harder for people to own a house. It sounds like a renting eviction thing, but the long tail of this is that now big corporations and venture capital firms are going to own tenements essentially. Yep. And you aren't ever going to be able to own it. And that's something when people say, let's make America great again, you would think they'd be talking about stuff like this. But the MAGA apparatus that installed these justices was never advocating for something like that. No one's like, make America great again so that the Coke business can thrive. And I have to pay rent for the rest of my life. And when I die, my kids get bupkis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like the core issue right now with that entire movement is it's the right wing populism that is so shallow that you can like punch it and your hand doesn't get wet. Like there's nothing to it. It's just Dr. Seuss and CRT. But yeah, you're right. And who are they gonna look out for? So there are a couple of different interests at play in this issue. So on the one hand, you have hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of those who might be thrown out on the streets during bad economic times and an ever worsening pandemic. On the other hand, you have some of those, you have landlords and even small landlords. They love to talk about the small landlords. Small landlords are today's small business. They used to love talking about small business. They never actually did anything having to do with them. They always pretended that the businesses they cared about were small. Those people might lose some profit, which is legitimate. They might. I mean, the whole idea of the rental assistance is to compensate for them for the lost profit, and we just need time to get that to them. But okay, let's pretend that doesn't exist. Here's the thing, you have to weigh the stakes, continue it, and maybe, but probably not, those landlords might lose some profits. What are the people who are gonna lose, what are the people who are gonna like suffer if we end it going to lose? Is it gonna be profits? No. Yeah, potentially their lives. It's a goddamn pandemic.
You're right. They're not on the side of the small landlords even. And when Rashida Tlaib tweeted, like, by the way, she tweeted, I'm a landlord and I want the eviction moratorium to continue. They're like, oh, what a huge hypocrite. It's like, no. When the thing that you're pointing out where the eviction assistance, the money, the reason the moratorium was extended so that the money could get to the landlords. Mm-hmm. But the state and local governments were so incompetent, either in unintentionally or I would say, look at what's going on intentionally, that they're not paying the landlords. So that argument that the landlords are gonna get that they give a crap about them is absolutely proven false. They want the transition to go to the big corporations. They want it to go to the big people. And that's what's so frustrating. And that's where I think a lot of people on the right and the left can really come together when they look at it's the corruption. It's not the people who own stuff versus the people who rent stuff. No, in this situation, it's the giant corporations funding government incompetence versus people who just want to have a place to live.
Yeah.
And that's wildly stupid.
Agreed. I'm gonna jump ahead to just a couple of comments from Cori Bush. Really fast. The majority in the Supreme Court says if they want to continue the eviction moratorium, then Congress should just do it. Which, okay, I get it. That was what we were worried they would say. We knew that that was what like Kavanaugh thought. That's not going to happen. So, and the Supreme Court knew that. So this is a decision that they made that they would do. Anyway, Cori Bush says we were outside the Capitol for 5 days, rain, heat, cold. If they think this partisan ruling is going to stop us from fighting to keep people housed, they're wrong. Congress needs to act immediately for every unhoused or soon to be unhoused person in our districts. And she says tonight the Supreme Court failed to protect the 11 million households across our country from violent eviction in the middle of a deadly global pandemic. We already know who is going to bear the brunt of this disastrous decision, black and brown communities and especially black women. Yeah, and I'm sure that she will continue to try to fight, but at this point, I'm not sure exactly what will be done. Maybe she's successful in getting the Biden administration to do some sort of executive order, but I don't know how broad that could even be. I doubt it could be up to the challenge that we're now facing as a result of this. The Republicans are not, first of all, the Republicans and probably some Democrats don't care enough about this to actually pass legislation, and even the Democratic leadership was passing the buck about it. That's why the CDC ended up doing it in the first place. And so this feels like the last we're gonna hear from the government on this. Now, bear in mind, of course, that there are some eviction and foreclosure moratoriums that will not be ending as a result of this. This is the federal one, which had to do with places that are seeing a lot of community spread of COVID-19, which is basically everywhere. But there are some states that have eviction moratoriums, including California, Minnesota, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, and Washington, as well as the District of Columbia, that will still have, at least for now, their more local or state level eviction moratoriums. So bear that in mind. Any further thoughts, Brett?
I mean, it bears focusing on that in times like this. It is. Well, what the Supreme Court did was say, like, listen, you gotta have a law, which that generally as a governing principle, I understand. And you do gotta have a law if you wanna avoid stuff like this. And so everybody needs to remember who didn't pass that law. When you're taking your stuff out of your house because the money they already said they were gonna send to you, that they all agreed on, didn't get passed on to you. It's in the mail, which is run poorly by company, but Louis DeJoy. Any opportunity to think about that guy. When it's lost in the mail, that's the tragedy. And so the people who could keep this going are Republicans in the Senate who decided not to because they're backing not people who own a duplex. They're backing people who own a million duplexes all over the country that they don't ever visit or know about or care about, but they just added to the fund that's diversified in a way that seems to get them more boats and houses to vacation in, but has no house for families across the country to live in.
Yep. Yeah, and like final hypothetical thought, the many, many conservatives who will be kicked out of their homes and their apartments as a result of this. What are they gonna, like, this is a moment to think about what the movement you back is actually doing. In all likelihood, they'll probably end up being pissed off at the Democrats. Democrats are in charge after all. So would it be wrong of them to be mad at the Democrats, even though the Democrats had sort of tried half-heartedly through the CDC to keep the eviction moratorium going? I don't know. I don't think it's gonna cause any sort of like a critical analysis of the movement, even when it so directly affects them. A movement that says they're all about protecting conservatives from those sorts of economic punishments. Anyway, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, we're gonna mix things up, talk about what's going on in Afghanistan and some of the domestic reaction to yesterday's devastating bombing. We'll have that for you after this. Hello everyone, how's it going? Okay, we got a lot of other news to talk about, so why don't we jump directly into this video.
To those who carried out this attack, as well as anyone who wishes America harm, know this, we will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay. I will defend our interests and our people with every measure at my command.
Okay, so that was President Joe Biden responding to the devastating set of explosions at the airport in Kabul yesterday. It's the sort of message that we have heard from past presidents in the wake of terror attacks. It has traditionally been the thing that you say as you launch into another interminable conflict. We are hoping that that is not what it is. But he does have to respond forcefully, at least in a rhetorical sense, because the explosions, it turns out, did kill. Some news is saying 12 US service members. I've seen others that say 13, but more than the four we had heard about when we were responding live yesterday on the damage report. 15 others were injured. It is the deadliest attack against US forces in Afghanistan since 2011. The first US military casualties in the country since February of last year. In total, 90 people were killed while 150 others were injured. That is a number of Afghans, including children, those who had been gathered outside of the airport, you know, desperately hoping to be able to get out. Flights have resumed. I just wanna let you know about that. Apparently about 12,500 people were evacuated from Afghanistan in the past 24 hours. So the capacity of the airport to, you know, get people out was hurt, but not as much as I would have predicted. But that said, we are going to have more from Joe Biden about what happened and what his plans are. Brett, what do you make of it so far?
I mean, there's just so many people with so many horrible, stupid takes on this. Yep. When they should have more information. Last night on the Young Turks, we showed like Jim Sciutto's reaction, and now it's being echoed. Basically, you have to have your eyes open to a handful of things. Like, A, what has happened on the lead up to this? You can't take your eye off the ball of like, who set up our retreat? Who didn't retreat from Afghanistan after, or who didn't pull out of Afghanistan after we accomplished our mission? How little of the mission was ever articulated, not only to the public, but also to people who were there. I know a Navy SEAL who, in the wake of all this, was like, yeah, when I was there, I had no clue what we were doing, and they never explained it to us.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how you plan on breaking this out, but like, if I know Joe Biden seems to have been the one who's like, I am too old for this crap, so I'm getting out now. I wanted to under Obama, and I'm the president of the United States now, so I'm gonna do it. This was never gonna be an easy thing. I don't know of any alternatives that should have been that have sounded better to me when explained. But you know, the most frustrating thing is like, the folks who are criticizing this all are former Pentagon people who are part of the apparatus that failed miserably in appraising the situation from all reports internally in the first place. So now they're going to be Monday morning quarterbacks telling you exactly what you did wrong, even though they were quarterbacks yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and we're going to get more to some of those bad takes in a little bit. If anyone has a foolproof system for stopping a person with an explosion or an explosive strapped under their coat from getting into a milling crowd of thousands of people, I'm sure the US military and in fact militaries around the world would love to know what that is. I don't know what that's supposed to be. It is a devastating tragedy that is far harder to actually stop from happening than those who are using it cynically, politically, whether to increase the military force in Afghanistan, lengthen its duration, or just score points against the Democrats as we pull out, will ever admit that it actually is. But that said, for a minute, let's focus on the effect of the people that are still there. There are hundreds of thousands estimated to still be trying to escape from the imminent takeover of rule by the Taliban in Afghanistan. Very few of them appear to be getting to the gates, at least as of early today. The crowd numbered in the hundreds rather than the thousands of previous days. And Taliban forces have been keeping them farther away from the airport's entrance gates than previously. Still at risk of further attacks, but seem like they're less likely then to get as many people because not as many are there, and US and Taliban security forces, which are going to be a little bit more distant perhaps. We are also finding out that while the initial flow of people getting out of the country wasn't that much hampered by yesterday's attacks, there is reason to believe that over the next few days, we might run into a major decrease because, and this is reporting on The Intercept, partly by a friend of the show, Ken Klippenstein, says that the Defense Department has asked congressional staff to stop sending evacuation requests on behalf of some Afghans whose work for the US during the war may now put them at risk of Taliban reprisals, according to two people that they spoke to for that. The Defense Department and the House Armed Services Committee did not respond to a request for comment. But the fear is that some of the people who had already been processed were being moved out yesterday, and perhaps more will today. We still have a few more days for the evacuation. Will they continue to process new applicants during that time? This is reason to potentially fear that that might not happen.
Yeah, there's a lot that you have to remember. In Biden's speech, he said, this feels bad. Obviously, we're all aching. He invoked his son who died after being deployed in Iraq. The other thing that he said was we got 100,000 people out so far.
Yeah.
The other thing is Jen points out in the comments, like he said, we have very credible threats that this kind of thing is going to be happening. Please be advised. There's not really a lot, you know, that's an accurate statement. They were getting active, credible threats. And this is a very difficult thing, and it hurts. And yes, they're going to have to change the way they're doing this. But odds are there's a bunch of people that are also hampering the efforts themselves. Like there was another Congress member who was trying to fly into Kabul in a private jet, which doesn't have the same kind of security and safety measures in place as a military grade jet. And they were turned away because it's like, just get out, just get out. Unless you're going to be part of this, get out. But then again, you find yourself in this very strange situation where now you're like weighing, you know, you're weighing who I got to who I have to trust in this situation. Like, because I'm going with the people who screwed up what was going to happen in Afghanistan afterwards. But yeah, I want to get to the point where you're pointing out all these people who are having these terrible takes.
We will, we will. Right before we get to that, though, partially as a result of this, and partially fears that we've been echoing for a week and a half now about your questions of what the long-term commitment to refugee resettlement will be from not just our government, but others. But obviously, we have, you know, the most potential ability to to raise the number here. Representatives Barbara Lee, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and more than 60 other House Democrats yesterday urged the Biden administration to raise the US refugee admissions cap to at least 200,000 for fiscal year 2022, saying that as the people of Afghanistan face an unfolding tragedy, the United States must open its doors to refugees fleeing the devastating consequences of a 20-year US military occupation and 40 years of US fueled war. This would be a massive increase in the refugee cap because as of this year, it was set at 62,500. And that was only after progressive pushback from its original 15,000 person limit that had been imposed by the Trump administration. But bear in mind, all of this is kind of nonsense because it's technically 62,500. As of the last time we checked in like a week and a half ago, they'd gotten about 5,000 refugees resettled this year. So hardly on track to meet that cap. So some progressives are, and by the way, you might say, well, how are we gonna reach that in the few days that are remaining? Well, the few days that are remaining are when we have armed forces in the Kabul airport. That does not mean that that is the end for when refugees fleeing Afghanistan could potentially try to resettle in the US. That can continue. We do not have to have 5,000 soldiers there to continue to open up for those who are able to make it to the United States. And that is something that I would like to see more support for.
Yeah.
Okay. I do want to move on to
The one thing that bears talking about is all these right wingers are like, I can't believe that Glenn Beck was turned away from trying to get refugees to America. But they're selecting Christian Afghans. They're like, discriminate. We want the Christian ones. We don't want the dirty Muslim ones. We want the Christian ones. That stuff makes me want to puke.
I hadn't even heard about that. It's terrible. I wonder to what extent he's even actually doing it. It's terrible enough if he is that it's so discriminatory, but.
And they're admitting
anyway,
it out loud.
Yes. Basically, as soon as the explosions happened outside the airport in Kabul yesterday, there were justifiable fears that those who do not want to see an end to the US occupation of Afghanistan would use this for one of two things or both. Calls for us to send more soldiers in, do more strikes in Afghanistan, stay there for the rest of our natural lives, or just use it against Biden because Biden was responsible for it. And we're seeing a mix of both of those things. So first, here's H.R. McMaster, formerly of the Trump administration, saying that despite the fact that Taliban guards were killed in the attack yesterday, he would not be surprised if ISIS-K was used as a cutout for the Taliban so they could humiliate us on the way out. Look, is that impossible? I don't think that that is impossible. There isn't any evidence that that is the case yet. They are considered to be enemies of each other. He should theoretically know better, but he doesn't want us to leave. And so it's a convenient thing to assert that it was like that it's actually secretly the Taliban. By the way, Brett, I saw Tucker Carlson was having a fun little chat with Glenn Greenwald yesterday about Biden intentionally letting these attacks happen so that we're embarrassed on our way out. I don't even know what that point is, but basically you can't have anything that happens without a conspiracy theory. There can't just be a tragic bombing that happens. Someone secretly must have been doing it. Someone secretly was doing it. Apparently ISIS-K, that's what we believe probably happened. Some terrorists set off a bomb, but no, it has to be somebody else secretly that you wouldn't expect.
What is their intention of saying, why do they say that? Because
I don't know.
Why does Glenn Greenwald go on that show to do that? Why does Tucker Carlson and Glenn Greenwald on that show?
Glenn Greenwald, to be fair, said he had no idea if that was true, but he did entertain it as, well, you know, you have to ask questions like this because nobody trusts the media, and that's there. The media are responsible for this, so we can't trust them and all that.
But that's it. It's like this, these precious D-bags, and Glenn Greenwald, okay, fine, that's fine. I he didn't participate in it. I don't want to wade into those waters. Wasn't his idea, but he's probably entertaining. I wouldn't be surprised if he was entertaining the idea so that he could get asked back on that show again. Like, period. I wouldn't be surprised. And I'm not saying that. I'm just wouldn't be surprised by that. I love this I wouldn't be surprised thing. Everybody's saying it. Jim Sciutto said it. You got this guy who's in front of the Stanford, you know, campus saying that. Like, this guy, every time they say, I wouldn't be surprised. You guys were surprised when Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the situation. The problem is, rather than finding ways not to be surprised, you just, you know, carpet bomb the entire airwaves with I wouldn't be surprised BS conspiracy theories or just rampant conjecture so that you cover all your bases. So that at the end, you could come to the same conclusion you were going to come to in the first place, which was we should probably go back. Lindsey Graham, we should take over Bagram again.
It's definitely for people like Lindsey Graham, that's what it's used for. Others either don't actually want to continue the occupation or understand that that's not popular, so they're not calling for it, but they still want to get as many points as they can out of this in a variety of different ways. I'm gonna go through a few other examples. I don't even know which camps each of these are in, but Johnny Joey Jones on Fox News said, I'll tell you, the war dogs are hungry and it might be time to let them eat. I hate that. It's not woke. As we would say, stack the bodies and let them see it. Yes, he really does seem to hate the idea that we would just go in and kill a bunch of people. And of course, you're having like nonstop calls for Biden to resign. You can see this was on the front page of Fox News saying his administration is teetering amid calls to resign. What?
That they do
implies
that.
Implies that he's considering it because soldiers died. Hold on a second, Brett. I know I just got to go through this. So it is devastating that the American soldiers died. It is like devastating that anyone died and far more Afghans died. But let's just bear in mind for a second that while all of those deaths are devastating, we apparently were kind of okay for the most part with the 2,450 who've died in Afghanistan so far. 1,150 soldiers from other countries, 444 humanitarian aid workers, 66,000 members of the Afghan military and national police, 48,000 Afghan civilians. The 60 soldiers that died in Afghanistan during the Trump administration, the far more that have died in Iraq and Syria under the last Republican presidency, they weren't calling for resignations from a terror attack. What did they call for Bush to resign after 9/11? How is that? I don't understand the leap that they're making there, that if a terror group attacks a group of people fleeing a war, that Biden is suddenly responsible for that. Do we believe that they would do that if Trump was still? It's a waste of time to even bring up the possibility. Obviously, they would not.
Trump afterwards then calling it ISIS X, like that's your role boy. And that's the guy. And then H.R. McMaster, one thing. Do you think America needs to be further? If you're the Taliban, what makes more sense to you? That America needs to be, quote, further embarrassed on the way out so that they could humiliate us on the way out. Humiliate us? What about the part where you say on the way out? They already won the damn war, idiot. They already won. What are we going to get more humiliated by? Or would you rather, if you're ISIS K, now I'm going to say ISIS X, if you're ISIS K, just A, establish your area because K in that whole like Khorasan includes most of Afghanistan, which you're vying for and saying that you're in charge of. And then the Taliban, you want them to still be engaged with the Americans. That's what you want so that you can get more inroads. No one's making those kinds of arguments. Everybody's just saying we should go in there because they want to do that thing where they just create a fog of war. So that they can get the defoggers in there that they're going to get paid to send in there. That's it.
Yeah, I just like if you want to be frustrated by this, please be frustrated by that bombing and every other needless loss of life for more than two decades of war. And more importantly than being frustrated, take that into your future thoughts and actions having to do with politics. Let's avoid having anything more like that. Let's actually learn something from this. But the idea that we're gonna, like, they just want a Benghazi. They want to pretend that this one loss of life is significant. Forget all the rest. If you just, you know, if you're just a US soldier and you were walking the streets of Baghdad and you got shot, we don't care about that. A couple of you have to die in one high profile incident and then we can pretend that we care about it. It's just so disgusting, the disingenuous, like, flip-flopping on whether life matters when it's convenient or not.
And Miravina makes a great point. If we could bring up graphic 11 again, saying, I wish we could leave voice messages for DYT. It'd probably be safer. But anyways, I watched the press conference and that picture is misleading. That photo in the graphic where Biden is looking down, the reason he's looking down in that situation is because Peter Doocy asked the question, like, does the buck stop with you? I mean, aren't you personally responsible for all this stuff? And he kept pushing. And this is when Biden's like, I already answered this question, but I'll say it again. What do you want? I already said I was going to get the people who did this, who already claimed credit for the attack. I'm going to get them. So you will have some kind of military action in Afghanistan. Don't get your panties in a twist. But then after that, he has to explain again. The person who was the unprecedented American president to negotiate with the Taliban was Donald Trump. So what do you want? You want it out. We're getting out. More people died during the time after which, and Fox News, you also asked a great question in one of those press conferences. There's a Fox News person who said, so there's no longer an interest for the Americans from a security perspective or a national interest to stay in Afghanistan. What's different about now than 5, 10, 15 years ago? 10 years ago, anyways. That was a great question. When did it stop being in our personal interest? And Donald Trump himself said that he acknowledged that. He wanted out. He conveniently set a retreat time in May of the next president's term. Isn't that convenient?
Yeah.
Because he wanted people who have that as their priority to vote for him to get him into that second term so he could then leave. But he never got out. And he just set the groundwork for something like this to happen. How do you, you know, and Biden's like, yes, I know what it's like to lose a family member to the, you know, the long tail of a war. Maybe not in combat, but his son got sick like so many others, as he said, during his deployment in Iraq.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And you want. It's just everyone is just being so fake.
Let's trust the draft dodger with the bone spurs who's really nervous about ISIS X.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's so concerned about that he can't even learn what same is. Anyway, but like we said, the long term fear is not, is Biden going to resign as a result of this? Did Trump resign when 4 US soldiers died in Niger, I believe it was. And do you remember, this is one of those, he had so many scandals that you don't even remember them. He had to do the thing, like the base level thing a president does, where he calls and talks to the grieving family. And he cared so little about the soldiers, couldn't even remember their names, that it became a scandal when the wife of one of the soldiers talked to Frederica Wilson, I believe it was, and said, like, this made me feel so much worse. He didn't care about any of this. He wasn't interested. And then they feuded. Trump feuded openly with Gold Star families as a result of this. But Biden should resign. Anyway,
what he signed up for. He knew what he signed up for.
He knew what he signed up for. Yeah. It's That's so dismissive said. Of a soldier that died. Anyway, McCarthy is demanding that Pelosi call the House to vote on a bill to halt the Afghan pullout. So not all the Republicans, but some are like, well, I don't think we can leave now. Let's go briefly. I want to go through these quickly. Let's minimize the conversation. But here's Chris Wallace in talking about the potential damage to the presidency, kind of alluding to, can you really afford to leave now?
Bad as yesterday was, the president can come back from that. But if there is an attack from the homeland, on the US homeland from Afghanistan after the withdrawal of all of our troops, that could be curtains for the Biden presidency.
I guess what I heard.
And that was after an extended thing that Chris Wallace was saying about, like, oh, we've really degraded our ability in the region to respond to these attacks. Can we really afford to? What if there's an attack? And then you have just rando Republicans. Let's go briefly to Representative Mark Green. I want you to pay special attention to the language he chooses to use to see the level of seriousness with which we'll have a discussion about the future of Afghanistan.
Straw man for the Taliban, but what do you think
the U.S. response to this immediately should be?
I think the president of the United States should come out and say all bets are off. The Taliban have absolutely defied this agreement by not securing, they didn't keep their promise to secure the access routes to the airfield. We are going to expand this operation. I'd put more military in there. I'd get every single American out. And I'd start killing bad guys.
You know, I don't think that saying I'm going to kill bad guys could be any worse, but somehow he put a particular like spin on it. I'm going to kill bad guys. That, yeah, no, this is what they think. It's all a game to them. Some of them don't want to be there. Maybe they've learned a bit in the last 20 years, but so many of them just want to start the thing up again. In the media, elected Republicans, they just want to be there fighting, having other people fight for the rest of our lives. Final thoughts, Brett.
Kevin McCarthy, like 10 minutes ago, was saying we need to stop the budget reconciliation process until we get everybody out of Afghanistan. That's his only priority, is finding like trash to talk. So what we should see is that, and also if it is the case, as it seems to have been and makes logical sense to be, that the ISIS-K did this to keep the Americans engaged with the Taliban so that ISIS-K can expand its territory and influence in the region and beyond. It makes total sense for them to do that so that they can bait these war dogs who are so hungry to eat into staying, period. And also, what is the, I just don't understand. Like, if you gave me a logical reason that ISIS, that the Taliban would be like, yes, please kill our people so that we could keep the Americans here? What? Especially because they're like, all they're trying to do is like keep it together for 5 more days. That's all the Taliban has to do. And then after the Americans are out, they're gonna hunt down Americans in Afghanistan. They have lists of them and like biometric data.
Yeah.
Doing this, it just didn't make sense on the way out for that to happen.
I agree.
Especially when I've seen like the last name of the guy in ISIS-K who they say that they attribute the suicide bombing to, his last, you know, their last names as they're called imply where they're from, and his hometown's down the street from Kabul. So it's a huge flex to say, no, ISIS-K is here and we're going to fight you, Taliban, for control over our, you know, long-term homeland to create a caliphate. Like that's just what it seems like is happening. But at the very least, like, if the answer from all these schmuckos is we just got to go back in and let more of our Americans die as a response to our Americans dying, I just don't get it.
I don't either, but we've heard it our whole lives and I think that we're hearing it again. Anyway, we do have to take our second break. We come back, we're going to be switching gears. We'll be back after this. Anyway, okay, we got some serious stuff. So everybody, get it together. Let's jump into this. A group of Capitol Police are now suing Donald Trump, among others, for what is believed to be participation in an instigation towards the events that happened on the January 6th. They say that they conspired to violently overturn the results of the 2020 election. So it's Trump, it's pro-Trump militias, it's other sort of sundry associates of them in social media and QAnon circles and a bunch of people. But the suit was filed yesterday in US District Court in Washington by the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, contends that Trump and his allies violated the Ku Klux Klan Act and DC law by scheming to block Congress from certifying Joe Biden's win. Let's give you a little bit from the lawsuit. They say plaintiffs and their fellow law enforcement officers risked their lives to defend the Capitol from a violent mass attack. An attack provoked, aided, and joined by defendants in an unlawful effort to use force, intimidation, and threats to prevent Congress from certifying the results of the 2020 presidential election. And because of those actions, plaintiffs were violently assaulted, spat on, tear gassed, bear sprayed, subjected to racial slurs and epithets, and put in fear for their lives. Plaintiffs' injuries, which defendants caused, persist to this day. And of course, some have died as a result of that. And so that includes a lot of people we mentioned on yesterday's show, like Roger Stone, people involved with the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, others involved with Stop the Steal. I mean, Brett, like I don't know to what extent any of those individuals, like on a case by case basis, can be tied to it. But it clearly was the objective of those groups to stop the certification. They could not have made that more clear.
Yeah, this is just one of the, so this is a civil suit. This is a lower, you know, lower standard, I guess, for culpability and frequently results, I mean, results in kind of restitution. And this is separate from a criminal investigation that's happening from the Department of Justice, which Trump is hilariously trying to dodge by saying he's going to invoke in executive privilege, even though he's no longer the executive. So they don't get documents. But in this situation, yeah, this is the most sweeping of them all. This really gets everybody. Like I skimmed, I guess, the actual lawsuit. It has like tweets and timelines. And it gets us to kind of say, all right. And I think it's a fantastic exercise. I don't think he's going to be held financially responsible because he's never been held financially responsible for pretty much anything. But it gets us to say, all right, when you are telling people essentially to do all of this stuff, when you as the president, and as they're saying things like there's people in the House of Representatives who are besmirching, I mean, you tweeted this thing, Tucker Carlson saying, I can't believe that you're besmirching the House of Representatives, Eric Swalwell, by saying you're looking for female staffers. At the same time, Trump is the president of the United States saying, let's not certify the election, which is right and certified, you know?
Yeah.
When he, not even your role boy Mike Pence is going to listen to you. But he's saying all that. At what point do we say that is wildly illegal and essentially treason? And I'd like people to be on the record saying what they think is treason, because so many of the things that they call out folks for from the right, calling people out on the left as treasonous acts that should get them executed. Like, what is this? What is this when you're saying, like, don't certify democracy? Instead, just complain about it. And that's like such, and I say this time and time again on your show, like the ridiculousness of dictators. It's weird. That's a tool that they use. They make it so over the top and weird that you're no longer like having a conversation. They don't let you have one. They just are weird at you. And they get so huge and it's all about this rhetoric that they just no longer are moored in reality. That's the point, because then you know, it's like you're trying to push something and the floor's greased. You just don't have any, you can't get any traction because there's no rhetorical footing to be had in this bizarro, like, you know, world that doesn't obey the laws of physics or reasoned debate.
Yeah, but and they train their own base to have no expectations whatsoever for consistency or logic, attachment to the values they say they have. They just are along for the ride at a certain point. And they sort of start taking the rest of us along with them. Okay. So we'll see as that proceeds, but let's move on to something else. Yesterday, the police officer who shot Ashley Babbitt on January 6th was interviewed on NBC, and we want to give you a portion of that. Here is a bit.
My name is Michael Byrd. I'm a lieutenant for the United States Capitol Police.
For months, he has lived in hiding, he says, over this moment. His decision to use deadly force against a rioter as she climbed through a barricaded door that leads to the House chamber. In the months since, he's been the target of threats.
Can you give us the nature of some of those threats?
They talked about, you know, killing me, cutting off my head, you know, very vicious and cruel things.
Racist things?
There were some racist attacks as well. It's all disheartening because I know I was doing my job.
Given the nature of the threats that you describe, do you have any concern about showing your face and identifying yourself?
Of course I do. That is a very vital point, and it's something that is frightening. I believe I showed the utmost courage on January 6th, and it's time for me to do that now.
So, look, Brett, we talked yesterday on the show about some of the issues I had with the interview. I don't like as justified as that individual shooting might have been, and we only have some details about it. I don't like the national, I don't know, ready acceptance of police violence. So I was worried that it would play into that, but also. He is, I'm sure, facing as many death threats as anyone has in some time, and will probably face those for the rest of his life. We speculated about why they decided to do this interview now. It seemed as if it might be trying to get out in front of him being identified by someone on the right wing. They said he's gotten these threats already, so it implies that some people did have his identity. What do you think about all of it?
I think in the immediate wake of this, they will intensify calls that this guy's a murderer and that she's a martyr. And the Al-Qaeda out there need that. They need a martyr. And this same group that says that you should be able to shoot people, like the Kyle Rittenhouse is great, going out into the street and shooting and starting something and then shooting people when they're like, get out of here. They're saying that this guy, who is the last line of defense against a crazy mob who has already broken a window against a door that is barricaded after they've made it inside the gates, you know, the equivalent of the outer gate, the Abbey gate. They're inside the Kabul airport at this point. Going bloodthirstily, many of them yelling, where are you, Nancy? What are they going to do? They're saying, oh, just trust us. We're fine. We're just breaking and entering here, saying, get her. This guy's like, I need you to stop, told her. Police officer told her to stop. He was just standing his ground. Like, by the reasonable logic of you're breaking and entering and you're threatening lawmakers, and the crazy bizarro logic that they foist on us all the time in every other situation involving a group of demonstrators, give them the benefit of the doubt. In every one of those versions of logic, she's not a martyr. She's a terrorist. She's a criminal. And I hate that she died. I hate everything that led her to be radicalized as a terrorist, to storm the Capitol building in the United States, in the DC Capitol building. But yeah, she's a bad guy, and she was shot by someone who you all say is a good guy, typically, if it wasn't a red hat behind her pushing her through a window.
Yeah, they're a bit more choosy about the cops these days, ever since they figured out how fun it is to try to beat them to death with flags. I don't even like I said yesterday, I don't even like this conversation that we have to have, because I don't want cops to shoot people, justified or not. I'm not interested in it. But that said, you are trying, and it's a great attempt to get through to these people and get them to be consistent when these people think that I don't know what should have happened, that the cops should have just allowed the crowd to go in, kill the representatives, tear him limb from limb. I don't know. But they also, these are the same people that think that George Floyd had it coming. Like that was a justified killing of him when he's literally laying down, unable to move. There is, it's not just that it's hypocritical or just that it's not consistent. It is miles past that at this point. There are no standards whatsoever. And so that cop is going to have to fear for his life for the rest of his life, because the former president has been involved in trying to demonize and fear mongering about this guy, talking about him being a part of Mike Pence's security detail and all that. Those who are going to run for president a few years are probably still going to be holding her up as a martyr and using this guy as a villain. His shirt, his face is going to be on t-shirts. I mean, God only knows for the rest of his life. It was a terrible incident. I wish that it hadn't happened. It didn't need to, if the right wing hadn't driven so many people insane. I don't like any of it. And I'm worried about, what comes next. I'm worried about what Fox is going to be saying about this individual now that they know. And the fact that he turned out to be a black cop is just going to make it so much worse, because they're going to find it even more appealing if that was possible.
That exact thing that you're talking about bore out in Texas, that's going to be on the Young Turks later on today, where you're crying racism thing. You're crying racism. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. There was a lawmaker who said, They were like, don't say racism on the floor during this debate about voting rights in Texas. She said racism.
Sure.
And then they all gasped. Oh my God.
Jesus. Anyway, okay. Well, look, that is unfortunately all the time we have for this hour. Thank you, everyone who's watching. If you're on Twitch or on YouTube, we do have more news coming. So we're going to take a couple minute break. We'll be back after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.